straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 185, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden, and I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And man, Duck, every time we get this guy on our podcast, I think back to the Big 12 media days about, I guess, 3 years ago in Dallas. And we were early in our podcast, and we had to take all that equipment. And we had no idea what we were doing. And
all we do now?
No, we don't. Oh, okay. And all I knew is, man, if we can just get a guest who's credible, maybe we won't appear stupid. We were wrong. We're still stupid. But this guy is a Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports joins us. What's up, brother?
How you doing, guys? Yeah, you wanted a guest that was credible and you settled for me.
That was our first road episode, Dennis. Oh,
I remember that. That was great.
That was awesome.
If only we had had Zoom back then, we would have been in great shape. No equipment, just a laptop, a plug, and maybe some glasses. But Dennis, man, college football is making all of these plans. We know the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going, look, we're going conference only. Big 12, SEC, chilling out right now, waiting. What do you think? Is all of this stuff going to come together magically as the corona plays the background and we're going to have football? I'm still skeptical, and I want to know what you got to think about that.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to come together magically. I think we're seeing it. Whatever's going to happen in fits and starts, kind of piecemeal. You saw what the Big Ten and Pac-12 did earlier this month. I know there was a lot of people upset that the Big Ten really stepped out of ranks and did that with the shortened season, conference games only. Now that kind of puts the other three conferences, SEC, ACC, and Big 12, in a box to do something. They're not quite boxed out yet. From playing full seasons, but you know the virus will dictate all of this. You know, there's a plan out there to play, you know, for the Big 12, 9 games plus one Power 5 non-conference opponent, or theoretically you would have, in a 16-week season, have 6 weekends to play with if you had games canceled, and in some form that goes for the SEC and ACC as well. So, and then I think whatever happens in that space, the next big hurdle is getting past the return of students on campus, which I think we all agree there's going to be some sort of spike in positives on campus, which may have nothing to do with athletics, but the optics are going to reflect on football and athletics. And that's going to be a big hurdle to get over.
There's just so many logistics involved in this whole thing. And you touched on the Big Ten and the Pac-12 kind of taking their own initiative. To me, anyway, Dennis, it shows that how dysfunctional college football is and how it's every man for himself. And it just, to me, it's bad optics. It's like, you know, I thought, what about, we're all in this together, you know? And apparently we're not. We're not. I'd like the 9 games plus one non-conference if we can save Texas LSU. That would work for me and Cedric.
Yes, that would be the game that would be saved, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, we're getting close to it. You know, everybody said, well, we're going to have to push it back. We're pushing it back, kick the can down the road to probably late July. So are you looking for something in the next week? For something definitive about the start of college football, and then you've got some news about the NCAA going forward.
Yeah. That move. Well, yeah, the ACC at the time, the ACC, Big 12, and SEC kind of said they were going to make their decision, quote unquote, in late July. Tony Barnhart, our friend at Sports Illustrated, said this week on Sirius that he expects something from the SEC next Friday. That would be July 31st.
Right.
I've been led to believe the Big 12 is going to wait. That, in fact, they may wait till they start hitting in early August, actually practicing. before mm-hmm. they make a decision, because it lends to the thought that they want to play this thing out as right. much as possible before they're forced to make a decision.
Then let me stop you there, Dennis. It's like, yeah. and I talked to Chris Del Conte today.
Yeah.
You know, we're taping the day before this is released. And he said, right now we're planning on playing South Florida on yeah. September 5th. And we're planning on a 12 game schedule. So that whole next Friday thing, I mean, to me, is there anything wrong with the Big 12, you know, waiting and, you know, delaying any announcement?
No, I don't think so. You know,
I don't know
what's going to be accomplished by them announcing something next week when there could be a dramatic change in whatever COVID cases. And that's what they're hoping for before August 7th, when that's kind of the de facto date when everybody can get back to fall practice. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. I think if you wait and there's players actually on the field hitting and sweating and possibly passing the virus between each other, then I think you sort of got to have to make a decision then, because then what are you doing? You know, what you can't just put them out there as mercenaries hoping.
Right.
That's been a perception out there as FBS and the Power Five push towards this. I'm not saying they shouldn't play. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying because the players don't have their own union, they don't have much of a say in it.
The one thing that just scares me is, like you said, this is football. They're hitting and snorting and spitting and cussing. It is a violent activity. And I do expect them to have the helmets where everything's going to be covered.
The shields.
The shields will be there. But I just wonder, how do you get through a football? I just know that they've already decided they're going to try and power through with this mm-hmm. thing. And I wanted to, you know, we've talked about this, Duck. I wanted to get Dennis's take on this. And, Duck, I know you just spoke to CDC. DKR at 50% capacity,
yeah.
I just thought it was crazy that I heard that in July with this thing raging. He didn't mention students when he sent that letter. It was season ticket holders guaranteed a seat, over 100,000 capacity, so half full. Doesn't exactly promote social distancing if you're skipping a seat, you know. So what do you guys think about that? I guess it's going to be skipping entire rows. I don't know. But was that a little bit too glass half full for CDC
literally.
In a literal yeah. sense?
I don't see the science in that at all. Gene Smith at Ohio State said a while ago that we could have up to 50% in the shoe. And this was 2 months ago or April right. or something. Like, where's the science in that? Is that,
there isn't.
Are you just broadcasting to your season ticket holders, to your base,
mm-hmm.
That we're going to be as normal as possible? I mean, in this very moment, I don't see why you let any fans in, frankly. When you look around at what's happening in baseball, in the Premier League, in soccer, in what's happening in the NBA, I don't get it. Somebody has to explain that one to me.
Well, I wonder if you allow 50% in, do 50% want in? I mean,
it's Texas. It's the South. I think 75% want in.
You've seen these COVID parties and these young people and these pool parties. They're
stupid.
They're probably well more than the 50% if we're being
honest. I had a conversation with Shane Lyons, the AD at West Virginia, a while ago.
Nice.
And he said, if I opened up my stadium right now, we couldn't fill it. There's too many people that are scared to go. Mm. That, to me, was a compelling statement.
Yeah.
He right. couldn't fill it if they
right.
could fill it.
Right. And people are starved for football to come back. Yeah. And then there's the economy factor, which we all know.
You know what, though, Doug? Sorry to interrupt. What bothers me about that is America has revealed itself to be a selfish country. Yeah. We don't care about our neighbors. We want football, but we don't mm-hmm. want it enough to wear a mask. If we had been wearing these masks in March, I'm telling you, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but do you think we'd be in this predicament? I just remember those 3 months I sat in front of the television and watched Family Feud reruns on a loop, and just I didn't leave the house. And Meanwhile, the kids were out frolicking at pools and partying. Then we reopened the bars too early, and it's really frustrating. As someone who loves sports, and we've all dedicated our lives to what we do, and we love what we do, but my eyes are wide open on this thing, and I'm disgusted with America. Number one, at the state level, at the city level, at the state level, at the national level, just disgusted with how we've handled this thing. We are so much better than this, and hopefully this will be a lesson for generations moving forward. We got caught sleeping at the wheel, and as a result, I think that the sport that we love to cover the most is going to be impacted.
Yeah. You look at Italy, I keep telling people this. They in a country where the winner of the election for whatever it is, prime minister or anything, typically gets way short of 50% because they have multiple candidates on the ballot. Mm-hmm. It's not one guy versus another. They rallied around leadership. They did what they were told through tremendous hardship. At one point, you needed a note to go out on the street to come out of your house. And now they're through it. Japan, with 38% of the U.S.'s population at one point, had 577 deaths because they wore masks. And we've got 138,000. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't believe in that, why are you wearing seatbelts? Why are you going outside to smoke? Just like that, it's a safety thing. It's just common sense safety.
So why are you why politicize it? I don't.
We're too hung up on our civil liberties. We're a democracy, and say you can't tell me what to do. And yeah, you can yell fire in the movie theater, right, but you may be going to jail. Okay, right, because there are consequences. And like you said, it's like, where's the social responsibility? Where's the accountability? And to me, the country shows up the greatest when there's a huge crisis, like a tornado victims and things of that nature, that we rally around.
Like 9/11.
This one, we're tearing apart. We're tearing ourselves apart. So, but back to football, Dennis. I think we've talked a little bit about the NCAA Board of Governors and action that they might take this week. Explain that to our listeners, what may be happening this week.
Well, there is a meeting of the NCAA Board of Governors on Friday where they could cancel all fall championships. That doesn't mean fall sports. That just means championships. There are 22 sports being decided in the fall, soccer, volleyball, some others. But most interestingly to us is the championships in FCS Division II and Division III. And if they do that, they would effectively be boxing in FBS football. You talk about optics now, with all those championships canceled, with seasons being shortened, with the coronavirus raging, that would really put the stakeholders and leaders of FBS football and the Power Five in a box to not play.
So it would make them look bad, but it wouldn't necessitate them canceling anything.
No, because the NCAA
doesn't. How much pressure is that? Yeah, how much pressure is bad?
Well, we just talked about optics, and the NCAA is being lobbied hard by some of these FBS administrators not to take this action. I'm not saying they will on Friday. I'm just saying it's on the table, and a lot of people know it's on the table, and they're very concerned about it. So, you know, this big discussion we've been having for months may be moot by Saturday morning. We don't know.
And it's your understanding, if the board of directors approve that and cancel the championships of, say, soccer, volleyball, things of that nature, would they be canceling the sports? Do you think they might still have seasons, just not a playoff?
Yeah, no, it would not, in theory, cancel the seasons. Now, you know, I suppose those schools could still play a sport and crown a conference champion and all that. I know in the MAC, for a lot of those Olympic sports, they're not even doing conference championship tournaments or meets or whatever you call them. So I think that would be a discussion, or that'd be a decision for those schools. But but it's just the championships, I think.
Right. And then I can throw up, wait, it's the purity of the sport. You're competing to compete and play. So you don't need the trophy at the end.
Stop it.
Hey,
we play to win, sir. We play to win. And I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. If you're going to have it, have it. I love those Wisconsin Whitewater Delaware Blue Hen games in December when we're waiting around for the big boys to get off Christmas break. I watch those games. I think they're cool. They're wide open. North Dakota State. I mean, those are fun games. So if you're gonna have football, don't put the FBS in a corner and just say, just because you're the FBS and you're this $1 billion machine that we're gonna play. Because what it does to me is it just sends the message to me that it's really about money, and you're not really talking about safety. One of the Arizona football players goes, well, if it's really about safety, why aren't we on campus practicing? And there aren't students on campus yet. Because let's keep it real. These players work for the school, and they bring in an inordinate amount of money, an exorbitant amount of money, and they don't want to mess with those dollars. We could eat the March Madness. Oh, that hurt. We lost March Madness. We lost Wimbledon. All that hurt. Oh, the Masters got pushed back. You don't want to mess with that cash cow, man.
Right.
You don't want to mess with that cash cow.
I'm sorry. I've said this many times in the last few weeks. There is never a better time right now than for a college players union. I'm not talking about paying them or anything like that. Right. I'm just talking about in this situation. I'm not even talking about the season being played. But we sure as heck would have some clarity on moving forward if those players had a say to negotiate their conditions of work, and I'll just call it work.
That's what it is.
Testing protocol, practice, you know, how, you know, because you've seen what's happened in the NFL. The NFLPA was really pushing on the NFL for all this stuff I'm talking about. Right. It took a long time for baseball to get going because of that. And I think if they had, and that's probably coming at some point, even if just for those reasons in the future. But if they had a players union right now in college, a lot of this stuff would be cleared up. We wouldn't be still talking about it and going, why did the NCAA wait till last, what was it, Wednesday to do testing protocols, guidelines, suggestions, best practices? All that stuff in that document could have been out June 1st.
Right. And the players are seeing around the country, they do have leverage. They do have.
Absolutely.
And they're starting to use their voice. So you are right about that. You mentioned the testing guideline that the NCAA put out, a minimum testing guideline for protocol. You wrote about it this week saying, okay, you got to be able to do that 72 hours before the game. But that leaves a lot of
obstacles
and a big old gap, does it not, Dennis?
Yeah, it's a minimum of 72 hours before the game. And I suspect that a lot of schools will just take that and go, well, this is all we have to do. Everybody come in Wednesday. And we'll do a test and hopefully get the results back by Saturday morning, and we'll be good.
Meanwhile, there's a COVID party on Friday on Thursday night.
I mean, how many raves, how many bars, how many dates, how many, you know, bars can you go to in 3 days' time and either get infected or pass it to somebody else? And look, I'm not the only one. I talk to doctors all over the country, and they're saying, no, this isn't ideal. You should be, I think ideally you'd do it Friday night or Saturday morning to see who's available, really, instead of in this scenario, you know, you're going to have to make a decision maybe on Friday to know who's infected or not. And you're going to have to make a decision about the starting quarterback. Well, you know, ethically, do I hold him out or not? I mean, that's another thing we can get into, but it's not enough. Twice a week would be ideal. I think some schools will be doing that because they'll be more conscientious. The president of Michigan is an epidemiologist, so they've been kind of out in front on this. Michigan recently they tested 514 athletes and staff, and I think he had four positives. I got to think that through the leadership from the president of Michigan.
Wow.
We need more epidemiologists as presidents, evidently. I think we need an epidemiologist as president of the United States. I think we'd be all right.
Yeah, he can't spell epidemiology. I just went there. Yeah.
But like you said in your article, that those NCAA guidelines are not enforceable.
No, they're.
But could they not? Could the colleges just forfeit this power to the NCAA? I mean, we need something standardized, don't we? I mean, you'd hate Clemson to be testing Friday night and North Carolina testing Wednesday. I mean,
yeah. No, we do need something standardized. The NCAA, unfortunately, every major decision they make is couched with, well, how do we not get sued?
Right.
Because they exist, you know, do everything they do is measured in liability.
Exactly.
And so as well intentioned, as well thought out as that document was, and it really, really is, it's just a set of guidelines that they can't enforce and no school can enforce.
We're talking about availability of tests, and you mentioned in your article the expense. You know, if you administer tests for 120 players, it'd be like $100,000.
At least.
And you're going to do this every week. And, you know, you're already strapped for money. So it's just there's so many reasons to not play football.
Well, Kirk, the biggest thing I took away in researching that story is that below the FBS level, FCS Division II, Division III, they literally can't afford to test.
No.
I mean, they're coming back to school in June, and they're shooting these guys in the forehead with that temperature gauge. You good? Yeah, go ahead. I mean, they can't – I talked to the head coach at Stetson, which is the Pioneer League. If people don't know, it's the most far-flung FCS league in the country. It goes coast to coast, San Diego to the East Coast. So that's why it makes it so important for travel. Mm-hmm. And he said – well, literally their players had a note from their doctor, you know, okay, he got tested. They didn't pay for it. They had to get tested on their own before they came back to school, whether that was in a Walgreens parking lot or they went to their doctor. And he said a booster told him, the coach, that if we have to test during the season, I'll pay for it.
But wow.
You know, that's one school.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Where we're sitting here, you know, late July – what do you think the percentages, both of you, that we are going to have a college football season of some sort this fall? What percentage, Dennis, would you put?
I've just told people that I'm non-committal because I say I think there's going to be college football games this fall. Don't tell me if this. Don't ask me if the season will end. If there'll be conference championship games. If there'll be a playoff.
Yeah.
If it will not last the season, it'll be cut off halfway through. That's all I'd be willing to say, that there'll be some games. You know, what that means right now, I don't know.
What do you think?
I'm about 40% right now. I'm 90% on the NFL. That's happening.
Yeah. Don't you think, Shed, that's helpful that they're going to camp, you know, this month and they're pushing forward through? So I guess for college football, they're kind of more the guinea pigs, they and Major League Baseball and NBA, right?
Yeah, I think it helps that the NBA has been really pretty good with their bubble thing. But football's not a bubble type activity. But right. I'm 40%, and I think with MLB and NBA and MLS already going, that helps college football. But, boy, you're just talking about a lot of young people who are doing young people type things, 130 presidents who aren't on the same page. It's going to be a CF moment, as my wife calls it. But I still expect, yes, there will be college football. And I will be masked up. And hopefully I will see Dennis Dodd in Baton Rouge the weekend of September 11th.
I would kill for that. Just to see half of me would be great.
Good half. Well, man, I know the cable guy's coming to your house. Yep. And man, we appreciate you stopping by and check him out. Duck, what's that Twitter address? It's Dennis.
At Dennis Dodd CBS, right? He's a national writer, and he's as authoritative and as connected a source as you can ever believe. And we encourage everybody to read his stuff at CBS Sports. It's terrific. And Dennis, thanks so much for being with us. And let's talk again, okay?
Love to do it. Thanks, guys.
Okay, brother. Take care. Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, it's always good to get Dennis on. He gives a fresh perspective, and he covers the sport from coast to coast. And that Stetson thing, that's crazy. Someone must really love Stetson football to pull out the checkbook for some COVID tests.
It takes to another level the old bring a note from your doctor or your
My thing is this, mom, man. Right? How about this? I'd zap you with the temperature thing, and you're under 98.6. Get your asymptomatic butt on end of that football stadium, even though you might be positive. It's a scary, scary thought.
That's the old confession standard. How many fingers am I showing?
Exactly. It's crazy. But you know what, man? I know we had some news. The UIL released that it's gonna keep the 1A through 4A schedule as is. There's going to be high school football. That's the plan. But the 5A's and 6A's are pushed back to September 24th. Not sure what that means. I've been of the opinion that there wasn't going to be high school football. Because it's not a huge moneymaker. And the, even though the kids aren't, by and large, aren't dying from it, they can still spread it to older people who are dying. So I didn't think that there'd be high school football. I was expecting them to cancel it. Are you surprised what happened there with the announcement with Dr. Elsa?
Yeah, I would say I'm mildly surprised. I'm not sure why you delay by a month the practices for just the larger, 5A and 6A classification schools and start the other ones on time. I don't know why – the bigger schools are at risk any more than the smaller classification. So I don't really understand that. Personally, I wish they would suspend them all for a month. And like we were talking with Dennis, just keep delaying the decision if you can. It's problematic for scheduling and when you push stuff back. But, health and safety have to come first, So, yeah.
If health and safety was coming first, they wouldn't have high school football.
We wouldn't have any sports, would we?
We wouldn't have any of it.
I wrote that a couple weeks ago saying, if economy wasn't part of this, we wouldn't have any sports till 2021.
And I believe that. I still believe it. It's about the money. I did a radio show with Paul Feinbaum, and he goes, "What about health and safety?" I go, "It's important, but those dollars are far behind. And in some instances, those dollars are ahead." No one's ever going to say that, Doug. No one's ever going to go, "We got to get this money, and hopefully people will stay healthy as a result." It's business. People are struggling. Now, these billion-dollar football factories aren't really struggling. They've lost money, Doug, but the Texases and the Oklahomas and the Notre Dames, the USCs, they'll survive this. But the Rices and the Texas States, those teams, they make a lot of money, those football teams, by being sacrificial lambs in a non-conference game. They can, like I wrote a couple of weeks ago, Doug, that Idaho opened their season last year at Penn State. And Idaho lost 79-7, but Idaho left with a check for $1.4 million, which funded that school's 11 sports. Those kind of paychecks don't grow on trees. And when you're talking about conferences getting rid of non-conference games, that's going to be a real financial hit to these smaller schools who are already having to grapple with testing and all of that, the money that goes into that as well.
Well, and it's going to affect the Power Fives. They can absorb the losses better. You are correct on that. But where we might see the consequences and the after effects is the dissolution of the smaller non-revenue sports at the big campuses.
Stanford got rid of a lot.
Yeah, Stanford cut 11 of their 36 sports. Now, 36 sports, and I think Ohio State may have 37. That's unusual. I think Texas has like 20. And I think most schools are around, 18 to 20. But I think at the Power Five schools, the largest 65 programs, I think we may see more of that where the non-revenue sports get axed, unfortunately, because, like you said, football pays all the bills, football and basketball. You take those away and, there are only a few self-sufficient schools in the country, maybe a dozen. and the rest of them are relying on money from their universities to, you know, keep their sports programs afloat. Take away football, and we still haven't seen it yet. I mean, we see Stanford cutting like water polo and, you know, men's volleyball and the sports that a big part of the country don't have. But I fully expect to see that between now and Christmas, the dropping and elimination of a whole lot of non-revenue sports at big schools.
You know what, too, Doc? When I think about it in totality, it's also going to cut down on those glamour trips that we see these non-revenue sports are taking. Women's basketball going to Hawaii, Virgin Islands.
Exactly.
Even though men's basketball makes money, we're not going to see any more trips to China anytime soon. Those kind of things are going to go by the wayside because it's decadent. Mm-hmm. It's high profile, but what does it really help that you're going to Hawaii? Right. when you could probably go to Tennessee and play in a classic with two other teams. So those kind of things, they're going to have to spend better because this thing, people are going to take a hit. These colleges are going to take a hit. And if football gets pushed back or worse, there's going to be basketball schedules that are going to come way down that they're going to have to amend and cut down on travel because it's still about making money. And a lot of these schools lose money with the non-revenue sports. The good ones break even, but the other ones siphon money. Well, someone in the football office is going to go, hey, that trip y'all were thinking about going to Australia for a week, nah, not going to happen.
It's going to hurt Hawaii in scheduling and bringing.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Islands, you know. But you're right. I think we're going to see a whole lot more regional scheduling. You know, if you're a Texas school, ADs are going to say you play other Texas schools where you can bus and maybe an occasional airplane trip. But, you know, there's so much extravagance and waste, as you said. And, you know, I've always been against, you know, home football games, putting up the home team in a ritzy hotel, you know, the night before. It's like, come on, you know. I mean, how many, you know, hundreds of thousands are they spending on that alone? And, you know, we may see a decrease in the size of these coaching staffs, you know.
Oh, perish the thought, Doug. We got to have analysts.
So many. And, you know, the analysts is the latest cottage industry in football where you have, you know, 10 college football analysts, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, about 35 grand a piece.
Yeah, exactly. All that adds up. And if it's 35 grand a piece and you have 10 of them, that might pay to keep your cross country program or rowing program or wrestling program afloat. So we're going to see a lot of belt tightening.
Yeah, we are. We are. But hey, before we go, I know we've been gone for a week and we're going to be gone again next week. What have you been doing? I know we don't get to hang out. I mean, I've been hanging out in Tyler for a couple of weeks and you've been doing your thing. We do our little Zoom.
When? Early March?
It's been March.
February.
It's been March. It's been March. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I've been cooking a lot. I've been mastering. I take the Southern Living Best Recipes magazine. I got at Barnes & Noble, and I've been cooking my butt off. And
what have you mastered? What's your dish? Say pork. I don't do a lot of pork. Give me something.
No, there are a lot of chicken dishes with mushroom sauces and pork chops with a glazed sauce and just a whole of a King Ranch chicken casserole made a few times. And, you know, my peach cobbler is to die for.
What? You know? Wow. Well,
it's like I've made that about three times. So
I've been watching a lot of cooking shows and eating a lot. Bev is taking good care of me, but I haven't I don't think I've cooked anything since I've been down here. My mom did make me some sugar cookies, and that's probably not good for the waistline, but it's definitely good for the soul.
But no fried pies. I'm disappointing.
I got to do a better job of begging. She was like, I'll make you some cookies. I'm not doing any fried pies. I get fried pies maybe four times a year, and I think I've had them maybe just twice this year. So, and usually I try to load up in the first 6 months because I know I'm not in Tyler as much during the fall, but yeah, right. Yeah, Mama, she's still kicking. She's 81 years old and just
excellent,
great, and she's feeling good. And it's just, that's the one good part about it is I've been able to see more of her and my family. But man, I'm telling you, we got to get sports back on the table. And I think that the NBA and MLB brings hope. MLS, that brings hope. Noticing your column, you had your fantasy league baseball draft, and you said you're projected to win it all. Is that right?
No idea to bring that up.
You know, what happened?
We lost Jason Jarrett, our sports editor, had to go out of town or something, so we lost him. I don't know why you didn't pick up his spot.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, you did too. I tell you, no, my outfield may be the worst outfield of all time. So, and now my guys are getting hurt already. Altuve, you know, I had a leg contusion. He's day to day. Anthony Rendon, my third baseman, he has a tight oblique. So, you know, it's a 10 team league, and I'm hopeful I can finish as high as 11th.
You got a gambling problem. You should just stop being in fantasy leagues. I mean, there's got to be an 800 number somewhere that you could call.
Well, let me know. Keep it. Let me, you know, text that to me if you have.
What are you talking about? I don't have a gambling problem, sir. I'm in one league. I'm in one league.
I can't. Have you been to Vegas? Have you been to Vegas 100 times?
No.
200?
No.
300?
No. I've been to Vegas maybe.
No, stop it.
Who's to say? 15. 15 or 20 times, tops.
How many times have you been to casinos in Shreveport?
Who's to say? I mean, who's to say? I don't know.
A thousand?
I don't know. But it doesn't mean I have a gambling problem. Hey, the casinos are open in Shreveport right now, and I haven't been. So
I don't have a gambling problem. I got a fantasy problem.
Wow.
Very disillusioned. Well,
hopefully our fantasy league will be up and running. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do an auction on a Zoom account, but
yeah. Yeah, we may have to do it. Hey, before we go, I'd like to give a shout out to Cliff Gustafson.
My man.
Coach. He's been in the hospital. He had major heart surgery last Wednesday, had some stents put in and a balloon to help the blood flow there and fluid on the lungs. And he's made a lot of progress, Ed. And I try to keep people posted on Twitter with thanks to his daughter, Jan. For the updates, and he may go home. He's shown enough progress that he may be able to go home this week. And he's 89, and so I know he and his family need your prayers. So
great guy. And when I was covering UT baseball, I would get a call ever so often. I love Augie, but man, first and second, and he's not swinging away. He goes, I like bunting, but sometimes I like swinging too. And so we developed a relationship. Doug, I was talking to Coach Gustafson about once a month while I was on that beat for 4 years, and he was just – was fun, just a delightful dude, just a great guy. So good to hear that he's doing better, and our prayers, our thoughts go out to him and his wonderful family.
Yeah, they really do. So, hey, and before we sign off, give your mama my best and tell her I look forward to getting some of those fried pies when you come back to Austin.
Don't hold your breath, man. I'm going to tell her. I'll tell her, but don't hold your breath. Hey, that'll do it for episode 185 of On Second Thought. Thanks to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports for joining us. He's Kirk Bowles, the Duck. I'm Sid Golden. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.